everybody. It's Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Welcome back to episode number 36 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. This week's episode is being brought to you by Spark R&D. Spark R&D is the makers of some of the best, most powerful, reliable splitboard bindings on the market. When I want to go big in the backcountry, I turn to Spark R&D. For more information, check out sparkrnd.com. This week's special guest is Stephen Sheffield. Stephen Sheffield works for Bosch e-bikes. He is the product manager and specializes in e-bikes for mountain bikes. So we're going to talk about how e-bikes have incorporated into people's daily lives, as well as e-bikes at ski resorts and much more. I also took a look at a bunch of splitboard skins this year. I reviewed 12 different pairs of splitboard skins to bring you this year's list of best splitboard skins. And last but not least, we're also going to look at weather, where to find weather for the remaining of the winter for the 2020 winter. Thanks for tuning in. Again, this is episode number 36 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast, proudly being sponsored by Spark R&D. Thanks for joining into the podcast. This week's episode, we're going to talk about e-bikes, e-bike popularity, what's been going on, history, and specifically about Bosch. So I guess let's start it off, Stephen. Give us some background about yourself and what you do for Bosch e-bikes.
Yeah. So I've been with the Bosch e-bike team for 3 years. Before that, I was with Bosch in a different division for 10 years. And my role at Bosch e-bikes is product management and business development and market intelligence, but I am also quite involved in the trail advocacy topic here in North America.
Wow. And as far as e-bikes at ski resorts, you know, I know that different ski resorts right now in North America that are starting to adapt the e-mountain bike side of things. Can you kind of tell us what that's looking like?
Yeah, sure. So Mammoth Mountain was really the first to bring this in a big way, and they were 2 years ago, they opened up their ski resort to e-bikes. They also brought in a fleet of rental e-bikes. That was something that they had to get permission for within their special use permit from the U.S. Forest Service, and since then, many other resorts have done the same thing. So many resorts are offering full access to e-bikes. Some resorts are doing e-bike tours or e-bike rentals or guided groups, and it seems to be a pretty successful thing for the resorts, and I think it's just a matter of time before we see all resorts including e-bikes within their summer operations. Main reasons for doing it is that you really start to open up that activity to a broader audience, especially a place like Mammoth that gets lots of visitors from the LA area or the Bay Area coming in from sea level. They can be exhausted pretty quick riding up at Mammoth. Also, it gives you the option to expand that group to, you know, people of different abilities riding together, different fitness levels riding together. So it does for the bike park what the ski lift did for skiing. It just sort of democratized it to an extent.
Well, and I love that you mentioned, you know, kind of a different user group and getting people back involved with e-bikes. Here in the Tetons, you know, I live in Jackson, Wyoming, and at first all of our pathways were anti-e-bike. And we had a lot of, you know, older people that live in the community, you know, getting 60s, 70s, 80s, and they looked at these new tools and they got the bikes, and all of a sudden the community said, we don't want these on the bike paths. And now fast forward about 6 months to a year, and everybody has an e-bike. And at first, it kind of seemed like there was some hesitation. You know, yourself with a background in biking, how have you heard of, like, traditional mountain bikers? What do they think of, you know, the e-mountain bike? Is that kind of a sore subject on the mountain bike side of things?
It's mixed, for sure. There are lots of opinions. It is a hot topic for many people. But we're seeing that acceptance towards e-bikes increasing, and one of the great things about having e-bikes at these resorts or on these paths is that people are starting to become familiar with them, starting to see that there isn't a big conflict and that they ride so much like regular bicycles that there's room for both on the mountain. Sort of, to some extent, it's a little bit like how it was at the beginning with the snowboards entering the ski areas. Over time, that acceptance seems to be coming pretty quickly. There doesn't mean everybody's on board yet, but it's certainly moving that direction.
Certainly. And I wonder if it's one of those things that people just need to actually try it for the first time. I kind of had a certain opinion about e-bikes. I mean, I loved seeing, you know, the older people and seeing, you know, the commuters and the families, but I really never thought it was going to be for me. And then I got an e-bike to test from Batch. And the first time I jumped on it, I just had this aha moment. And, you know, it had the Bosch motor. I mean, it's the class one. And I mean, I ride the thing. I mean, now that it's winter, not as much, but I was out every day with my dog. I mean, I keep it in eco mode, so I still have to pedal and I get a good workout. And it just, the way I describe it to people is like, it just feels like the most efficient pedal. Like when you're just completely dialed on your mountain bike or your road bike and your legs are moving, like, it seems like the e-bike is just wanting to do that all the time. And, you know, again, I don't even take mine out of the eco mode. And it's one of those things, every time somebody comes over, I say, oh, go ahead and try. Or my neighbors ask me, you know, when they're walking their dogs, they get on the bike and you just see them light up. And I really haven't seen that with very many sports or that many new things where people are just like, I'm going to buy one of these. I mean, I've yet to see somebody jump on an e-bike and haven't said, I need to have one of these.
Yeah. Yeah. No, your experience is great, and that Batch bike is an awesome product, and that's exactly what we've seen out on trails or different studies, that when you hear the term e-bike for the first time, maybe you have some thoughts, maybe you're thinking more like an electric motorcycle or something like that, but there's two things that tend to happen once somebody tries a new bike. One, like you described, they love it. They come back with a big smile on their face, and yes, they want to buy one. And the other is that they realize how much it feels like riding a bike. And you know, that idea that this thing is just going to take off without you and you're just going cruising, that idea goes away quite quickly. You realize you're still pedaling, you're still putting in the work. It's just like any time you get on a bicycle, you're deciding how much effort you want to put in and how hard you want to go. It's very much the same on an e-bike. So there are lots of studies. Recently, BYU published an interesting study where the riders on the e-bikes, their heart rate was 95% of the level as the riders on, or when they were doing the same trails on a regular bike. So it's quite easy to get up to, you know, a desired heart rate if that's what you're going for. But then, yeah, you have the option to bring up the assist level or keep riding hard and maybe cover a bit more ground than you would have otherwise on your bike ride.
And what about, you know, the future of e-bikes and Bosch? I mean, it is kind of an investment. You know, we're looking at, I think the Batch one at around 2000 is kind of the entry level, and then, you know, certainly up from there. Because this is an electronic device, we're, you know, in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line, how do these e-bikes, are they upgradable, or what becomes of, you know, an e-bike from now in 5 years?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. So if you look back to 5 years ago, what e-bikes were available then and how many of those would still be available now, a lot has changed. Bosch has been around for 10 years, and we service and have the spare parts and replacement batteries and everything for our products for, you know, for a long time after the sale of the product, so 8-10 years. And that's something to pay attention to when you're purchasing an e-bike, is how well you'll be able to maintain it down the future or in the future. As far as where these products are going or how much they're going to continue to develop, they certainly will. You'll see systems become more efficient and smaller and lighter, and that'll come step by step over time. And hopefully we'll see battery technology that we can include longer ranges without extensive weight gain to the bike. So that's where we'll go, a little incremental, bit by bit. I think why we're seeing e-bikes taking off so fast now versus, you know, e-bikes have been around for 20 years, is that the technology is really there now. That is, you can have a bike that's not crazy heavy, that performs really well and is really well balanced. The technology that's out there now is providing such a great experience to users that this industry is really taking off. It's becoming a mainstream part of the North American bicycle industry.
Do you have a lot of consumers that are customizing or upgrading their own motors right now or batteries?
No. So with the Bosch system, we don't supply like a add-on kit or anything like that. So our stance is that an e-bike really needs to be built from the ground up. So if you were to take a regular bike and add, you know, an e-bike system to it, there's certain risks involved with that. You want to make sure that the frame is built around the e-bike. That helps for safety, but it also helps for that riding experience. Everything is well balanced. Everything's in the right place. And other things as well, because the strength of the frame, the braking. You need to make sure your braking system is designed around your e-bike system. So, there are some things you can do to upgrade an e-bike. You could for some models, there's the ability to upgrade to a higher capacity battery. You can, in the aftermarket, upgrade your display. As far as the system, the actual motor, that really should be built together with the bike and integrated together to have the best experience.
Certainly, and that makes sense about talking about the rider experience and especially the comfort. That's one of the things that I've been talking to Batch about is the bike is amazing, but you definitely feel a different sort of vibration come up through the bike, and there's a lot more power, and, you know, at that point, it's a little bit more rigid, and it doesn't have, you know, like the shocks, and so I actually went and replaced the grips on the handlebar and the seat. I've been looking at maybe switching over to a titanium handlebar just to actually help absorb some of that, but yeah, I could see where you can't just really throw this on any old bike and expect it to perform the way that these are being built from the ground up. And you mentioned a few of the brands, there is the ability to upgrade your motor. So you do have an existing e-bike and you decide, okay, I'm looking for something more, maybe 3 or 4 years down the line, there's a new motor. And is that something that's fairly easy for somebody to do on their own, or is that just take it to the bike shop and let those guys fiddle with it?
From the main players in the e-bike systems, I don't see that with any of them. So when we talk,
perfect.
The mainstream bike brand, where you could do that is where it's like an add-on kit that you add to a regular bicycle, sort of like a DIY version of an e-bike. Where at any time you could change that to a different motor down the road, but you'd never really have that balance and ride experience and safety that you would get from a bike that was, where the drive unit and the frame and the whole bike were designed and integrated together.
Do you think that there's anywhere that e-bikes should not be allowed?
I think there are places where it depends on the type of an e-bike. So if you were to take like a class 3 e-bike, like we talked about earlier, that goes up to 28 miles hour, that doesn't belong on a trail. You don't need anywhere near that kind of speed on an off-road, but for commuting, where you're interacting with automobiles, it's great. Same thing with class 2 e-bikes that have a throttle assist. That's fine on a street that can fit in fine, but it shouldn't be off-road. You wouldn't want an e-bike with a throttle on off-road. It wouldn't ride and treat the trails in the same way that a regular bike would. As far as the class 1 e-bike, the pedal assist, that is, just multiplying the rider's effort, tops out at 20 maximum, but really doesn't get that anywhere near that fast when you're riding and when you're climbing off-road. I think that can be ridden anywhere that a regular bicycle can be ridden.
And the reason I asked is, as I mentioned earlier, the pathways now are e-bike friendly. The National Forest here in Jackson, and I'm not sure if this is across the board, they have signs at all the trailheads saying, no e-bikes, no e-bikes. And it's kind of weird, you're in the middle of nowhere and you see this big, huge signs that have been erected. But then I believe the national parks are now allowing e-bikes on the pathways. And so that's where, for me, I would love to see, more users out there. I mean, if somebody's going to use a pedal assist bike for, a long cross-country ride and they're still going up the mountain and huffing and puffing, and like you said, the 95% heart rate, I think they should totally be there. And I personally, I really can't find anywhere that they shouldn't be, but it just seems like right now there is some people that are still hesitant to buy them just because they're really not sure where they can ride them. How about safety on e-bikes? Do you recommend helmets? I mean, we see, families with, 2-3 kids on the bike. You're riding a motorcycle. I mean, or you're riding something that starts to generate power similar to a motorized vehicle.
Right. Well, first, an e-bike, especially a Class 1 e-bike, it is designed to allow you to ride like a strong rider, to allow anyone to ride like a strong rider if they will. But a Class 1 e-bike doesn't take you out of the realm of normal or, of the riding a capability or riding strength of an athletic rider. So your speeds are not going to be higher than the speeds of a rider who's in great shape. It's not. You're getting nowhere near like motorcycle speeds. It's not at all. You may be a couple miles faster here and there, especially off-road on a Class 1 e-bike. So we would say, hey, you definitely need to take the precautions that you would take with a regular bike. You need the helmet. You need to be paying attention on the trail, depending on the type of riding you're doing, other precautions. But there hasn't been any data that would show that e-bike injuries are more dangerous or more frequent than traditional bicycle injuries.
Okay, that makes sense. It's interesting time for the e-bikes. I think here within 2 to 5 years, especially in resort communities or kind of the hip communities, if you're not riding an e-bike, it's one of those things. Once you see them go down the road, you're like, holy heck. Like you see them on the path and you're like, okay, that person's, they're moving a little bit. And then you get on one. And like you say, you just feel like a strong rider. You're like, okay, maybe I can start going into work. It's 3 miles from my house to the office and it's a fun ride, just zip down the bike path. And so, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see kind of the future. Do you see e-bikes entering into road biking or is that already a thing?
We are starting to see some bikes, most of the road bike companies are coming out with an electric version now, and a similar idea. So the e-mountain bike, it either allows someone to keep up with that group that maybe they weren't able to keep up with before, or it allows someone to go on a longer tour or, go up hills and explore areas where they were maybe less likely to do that on their regular road bike. Definitely a market developing around that as well. But, one thing, like you said about, we certainly will start to see a lot more e-bikes around, is true. But they won't replace regular bikes completely. And what we found with e-mountain bikers, most of them still ride their regular mountain bikes too. They just add the e-bike as an additional mountain bike to however many they have already. And they use it for maybe you ride your regular mountain bike 3 days a week and your e-mountain bike 3 or 4 days a week, and it's sort of a different experience and you go different places maybe on it, but for most people it fits very well within their normal. It doesn't take them away from traditional mountain biking completely.
Gosh, you're going to need a lot of garage space to keep all these toys in the future. Well, I'm just, like I said, I'm super impressed, and I hope that all of our listeners get a chance to go out there and try an e-bike, whether it's a friend's or at a shop. One of my neighbors has the Class 3 bike, and I got on it, and I tried it on a gravel road, and I was not a fan. I mean, that thing, I think he had it in turbo mode, and it threw me in the back seat, and I said, okay, well, I could see where, that's not for everybody. And I think he bought, he's a neurosurgeon. He bought the $15,000, just this incredible bike. But, that definitely wasn't for me. But for somebody like himself, that allows him, this 80-something-year-old guy to now ride his bike into town. You see him coming down the bike path and he's got this huge grin on his face. And you're like, well, there goes Gary again. So.
Different strokes for different folks. I have a Class 3 bike that I use to commute to work on, and it is fantastic for that. If I'm out on gravel or if I'm out on a mountain trail, no interest in doing that at all. I also have a class one bike, a cargo bike that I put the kids on, drop off at school or the soccer game. And that is just such a cool way to get the family around where your kids are outside and they're getting into the sport of cycling through that experience. And, you can reduce the car on the road. It's a great thing. So yeah, there's so many different e-bikes out there now that are available. Every type of bike comes in an electric version now. And really the best thing for people to do is get out and try it and make their own experiences with it and see what works for them and what fits for what they're doing and have a lot of fun with it.
Well, this is great, Stephen. I appreciate you kind of giving us a rundown on e-bikes. Last but not least, do you still own any non-e-bikes?
Oh, sure. Yeah. In fact, I'm a cross-country rider, so I have a Pivot cross-country bike that I love and that I'm riding nearly every day. And I won't give that up, but I love riding the e-bikes too, for sure.
Okay, so I like that you said that. You know, a lot of times we see guys getting into snowmobiling that have experience with the, you know, backcountry skiing and snowboarding, and once they get on the snowmobile, they completely forget about the other thing. And so, and as you mentioned, you know, it's just another tool. It's not completely gonna, you know, you don't have to think, okay, if I buy the e-mountain bike, I can't have my hardtail or I can't have my full suspension downhill anymore. You can kind of have that, kind of the mix in between.
Yeah, and it's good to experience both, and, you know, there's things you learn, the things you can work on the e-bike, and a lot of people train with an e-bike or use it on the off days who are serious mountain bikers, and it's been really fun to see the way people integrate it into their daily training regimen or whatever. It's pretty cool.
Right on. Well, thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it. And have a great day. We definitely look forward to getting out on some more of those Bosch motors and those e-bikes. And yeah, it's just it's been a blast.
Well, great talking with you, and let me know next time you're in Southern California. We'll go for a ride, or we'll bring some bikes up to the T-Hall.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks, Stephen.
All right.
Alrighty. Bye.
Take care.
All right. Well, that was a great interview with Stephen. I hope you learned a lot about e-bikes. I certainly did. For 2020, I tested 12 pairs of splitboard skins. You're welcome. Not all these skins were fun to test. When splitboard skins fail, it really, really sucks. So this year I got lucky. I had some good ones. One of my favorite brands this year, along with our testers, was Black Diamond. Black Diamond coming out of the woodworks, making splitboard skins. They're using that STS clip system they have. The thing's bomber. I really enjoyed the skins. The only thing you're going to hear people talking trash about the skins is their skin bag. I don't really know many people that use their skin bag. I don't recommend that you use yours. So yeah, other than that, these skins are awesome. Black Diamond has two different kinds specifically for splitboarding. The Black Diamond Ascension splitboard skins, those cost $174, as well as the Black Diamond Glide Light splitboard skins, $189. As you can probably tell by the name, the Glide Light is going to take you and go a little bit faster, while the Ascension skin is going to be more for that guy that really just wants the gnarly grip on the way uphill. Second on the list, well, not really in any order, but the Jones Nomad splitboard skins. Why do I like these? Well, these skins come cut specific to Jones splitboards. We've talked about this many times. Definitely read the article, but a splitboard skin that comes from the factory cut specific to the splitboard, that's the kind of skin you're going to want. Less problems involved. $149 on that one. Union paired up with Kola. Kola is the makers of some of my favorite slipboard skins. They've been hard to get in the U.S., but now they are available through Union. $199 gets you a solid pair of slipboard skins. Union's got a cool new clip on there. I think that was their own clip that they're using with Kola. Yeah, really nice skin. Can't go wrong with the Unions. G3 also made the list. G3 with the Grip splitboard skin. This thing is gnarly. It's got another clip system that's kind of similar to that STS system that Black Diamond uses. When you put that thing down, that back tail clip, man, you got to watch your fingers. It snaps down hard. $199 puts you into the G3 Grip splitboard skin. The other cool thing about G3 is they actually have, I think it's 3 or 4 splitboard skins in the line. So you can find ones that are a little bit faster, kind of that in between, and then like the Grip just for going uphill. Oh, the Montana Mix splitboard skins, $199. These are only available ordering direct from the company. So if you want them, hit up Montana Skins. This is a Swiss brand in the United States selling skins. Buy these skins, or that's where you get them from. They're killer. They've got great tack, amazing glide, Montana slipboard skins. One of my favorite things about them is their clips. They just go on and off really nicely, and yeah, just a solid pair of skins. Another brand I haven't tested in quite some time, back on the list, Coltex. Coltex slipboard skins. These are $199. This is the mix of the Mohar synthetic. I believe all the skins on this list are kind of that 65-35 list. I could be wrong. You might want to check that out, but check back on the website for more information. So that is the roundup of the best slipboard skins of the year. You know, slipboard skins are amazing until they're not. So even talking to Jeremy Jones on last week's podcast, if you haven't heard that episode, number 35, tune in. Jeremy Jones, you know, the slipboarder, he talks all about slipboarding, skins, that kind of stuff. So pretty cool. Anyway, those are the slipboard skins I am standing behind for the season. If you have any questions on skins, why they're failing, why they're not, check out that article I wrote, and feel free to give me an email or leave a comment below. Okay, let's talk about weather. Last but not least, weather. It looks like it's going to be another very, very warm winter. I think the exception to that will be early January. We'll probably see those cold temperatures in the Northern Rockies, as we typically do. And then it's going to start getting warm, especially on the West Coast. Ooh, it looks like a hot, hot winter out west. So as far as snowfall, I'm looking at snowfall in the Northern Rockies and above. I'm thinking Idaho, Montana, here in Jackson should do really well. Right now, it's pretty low tide. It's been warm. People are out skiing. It's fun. There's places across the United States that have snow. But nothing, you know, nothing record-breaking at the minute. Again, it's just been pretty mild kickoff to winter. But don't let that stop you. The winter storms will come. They're going to come in wet, so keep that in mind for your destination. Some of those places might kind of turn over to rain a little bit. It looks like even, gosh, up in Vancouver, that area is going to be pretty warm. I think everywhere is going to be warm. What do you call it? Global warming, climate change, however you want to look at it. Things are warming up at the moment, so hopefully they start cooling off again. That'd be a cool trend if we could go into global cooling. Imagine that. Yeah, we're in global cooling. So anyway, check it out. Thanks for tuning in. Episode number 36, Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. I was really happy to have Steven on the show this week. Kind of branched out. We've only really talked about skiing and snowboarding and splitboarding and all these winter sports. But hey, there's a lot more to that, even though the podcast is called the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. Thanks again, everybody. Episode number 36, and we'll chat with you next week. Peace.